All right, hello again. We're going to think about that story. We're going to think about a big question for the night. Jesus, don't you care? But first of all, I want you to think about a time in your life when that question has come across your mind. It might not have been in exactly those words, but when has that been the cry of your heart? Something is breaking, something is going wrong. You've hit a dead end and you're thinking, does anybody care? You train so hard and then you get dropped from the team before the last game of the season. You study as much as you can, but it doesn't seem to make any difference when the exams come around. You can't seem to make friends that really last. People seem to create distance to you. You feel left out, or you hear later on and just online that there's a party or people hung out and you weren't included. Jesus, don't you care? God, don't you care? Doesn't anyone care? This week, as part of my role, a large part of my time has been about planning a funeral for a person aged 24 who passed away. And as I sat in the living room of the family and looking around at these broken hearts and breaking hearts, I'm thinking, Jesus, don't you care about what is going on here in this world, this broken and difficult world? Jesus, don't you care? It's a huge question, isn't it? It's a question, I think, whether you come here every week to youth and whether you're someone who reads the Bible, it's a huge question, or whether you're brand new and you've never really thought all that much about God and this is your first night ever walking into a church, it's still a big question. God, don't you care? Jesus, don't you care? Doesn't anybody care about what is going on in my life? Now, in that Bible reading, in that little famous story, just two paragraphs or so about Jesus in a tiny wooden boat on the Sea of Galilee, in that story, we get a brilliant answer to the question, Jesus, don't you care? And we will come back to that boat in a moment, because in that boat, on that real place, a little bit of time ago though, 2,000 years ago, but on that real place, at a real time in history, God declares a great answer to that question, Jesus, don't you care? But before I launch into that question, Jesus, don't I care, I think it's worth peeling back a little bit. Because there's a question I get at school a lot. I work at Barker College, one of the chaplains there. I talk every day to lots of kids about the Bible and about God and about Jesus. But the most common question I get is, now, you can talk about what God is like. He's loving, he's kind, he's just, he's fair. You can talk about God's character, but I can't see God. And I think that's the question we need to think about before that. If God is invisible, how do we even know he's there? What's the point of talking about God being caring if we don't even have any evidence that God exists at all? So let's step back a little bit in the story and think why it is that Christians even think that there is a God. And then that sets us up to think about why we think that God is caring. As I said, we can talk about God's character all we like. He's loving, he's powerful. But if we don't even know he's there, what's the point? I think a lot of people approach that question in a way that actually sets them up for a dead end. I wonder if you might have thought about that question in this way, or your friends have from school. They say, I can't find any proof of God here in this world, and so why should I believe in God? There's no scientific proof that God exists. I can't see God. I'm used to processing all the information I need about the world through my eyes, through hearing, through our physical senses. And since we can't get to God that way, what evidence do we even have that God is there at all? But here's the problem. When we look for evidence of God's existence in that way, we're actually making a really huge assumption. And that assumption sets us up to hit a roadblock. Most people make the assumption that God is someone or something that is inside our universe that we could discover if we just looked long enough. I'll say that bit again because it's worth unpacking. A lot of people make the assumption that God is someone or something inside our universe that we could find if we just looked long enough. But if God is God, what I mean is if God is the creator, then he's not going to be inside the universe that he made. He'd be outside the universe. And we might not be able to find him the same way we could find an island in the Pacific Ocean. God is not like a chemical compound where if we had a microscope, we could discover it. God is not like a star in the universe. If we just traveled far enough, we'd get to him. If God really is the creator, why would we expect to find him hiding inside the universe? Alana, I'll get you to put up the picture of this snow globe. Here's the logic. If I kind of reduce it right down to a really simple way. When we go looking to find God physically in this universe, it would be like the characters in that snow globe coming to life, talking, and then looking all around this snow globe and saying, well, I can't find the creator in here with us, therefore there's no creator who made us. Do you see how the logic doesn't really quite fit? If that snow globe is there, why would the creator be inside the snow globe? Now, that seems simple enough, but I think that's the logic many of us apply to God. I'll put this picture up. Here's the next guy. This is Yuri Gagarin, Russian astronaut, the first person into space. So he doesn't land on the moon, but he's the first human to get up into space. When he returns from space, he's from Russia, he delivers a report back to the president of Russia at the time, and the president of Russia writes this famous essay. And in it is this one line: we've been to space and we did not find God. God does not exist. But you see how they're following the snow globe logic. If I look far enough in the sky, if I don't see God, there's no God at all. But if God is God, why would we expect to find him inside our universe? Let me put it another way. You all know the Harry Potter books, and there's J.K. Rowling, the author. Think of Harry Potter in his world. Think of Harry Potter in his own universe. When Harry Potter is in his universe, he can walk around, and he can meet anyone in his universe. He can meet Ron, he can meet Hermione, he can meet Hagrid, he can even meet Dumbledore, the most powerful guy in his universe. The one person Harry Potter cannot meet in his universe is the author, J.K. Rowling. You see, it doesn't work like that. Harry Potter can't get out of his books to climb out of his universe to meet the author, J.K. Rowling. They're operating on different dimensions. The only way Harry Potter could get to know the author, J.K. Rowling, is if, let's say, she wrote herself into the story as a character. And there's Harry Potter, he's sitting in the lounge room in the Gryffindor common room, and then the door opens up, and in walks a new student called J.K. Rowling, and then he gets to interact. That would be the only way if a character in the story could interact with the author. Do you know who this person is? Yes, Stan Lee. Stan Lee passed away 2018. Stan Lee is the comic book author of all of the Marvel characters. He's the author, the originator of all of the Marvel heroes. Now, when the Marvel movies started to be created, Stan Lee, the comic book author, did a deal with the studios that said that he, the author, needed to appear in every one of the films. And so you can look up online all the tiny cameos that he has done when he's featured in every movie. So that is, the author has written himself into those movies. But he's just made a little appearance, tiny bit here. Never really changes the storyline. Sometimes he's in the background. Sometimes it's a side character. Sometimes he gets a little moment of speaking. But just there, in, out, gone. The only way the Marvel characters get to meet Stan Lee is if he writes himself into the story. Now, here is the extraordinary claim about Christianity. And I think this is one of the most extraordinary claims about Christianity. Here's the claim. The claim is that the God who made everything wrote himself into the human story. Because humans can't get out of the universe to find him, the only way we'd ever know is if he, God, writes himself into the story. if he becomes a character in human history. And the extraordinary claim of Christianity is that Jesus did exactly that. That he took off all of his godness nature, took off the crown of heaven, and made himself very small, like a tiny baby, and landed in a manger. That God wrote himself into the human story not to have a starring role, but to serve. Not to get his name up in lights, but to bring light to a dark world. Jesus entered that manger even though he knew he would end up hanging on a cross. That's the extraordinary claim of Christianity. You can't go looking for God through a telescope or microscope. We'd only know about him if he, the author, the creator, writes himself, if he comes into our world. And that's what he's done in Jesus. We can't see that invisible God, but he has turned up. He has turned up. He's bridged the gap. And he's left this little catalogue of stories, story after story after story after story. We find them in the New Testament, in the Bible, in the Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. A catalogue of stories that capture the couple of years when he not just made a cameo, came onto the scene and left, but when he changed human history by stepping in as a character like us. And we read one of those stories tonight. So we might even ask, if God is out there as creator, why would he bother coming into our world? Why would he bother doing that? If you designed that beautiful snow globe, why would you bother trying to get the power to get into the snow globe? Why would you do that? Why would you lower yourself that much? And we look at that tiny, dirty manger, we could ask the same question. Why would the all-powerful God, why would he want to write himself into our story? Human story is not that great. And yet God stepped into it. Why? Jesus, don't you care? That's why. It's to show how much God cares. It's because Jesus, who is God, cares. Jesus, don't you care? We're already getting the first part of the answer. Yes, he does. He cares so much that he's come from heaven to enter that manger, to hang on a cross, to show, to come close, to show how much he cares. He's come into our mess. Jesus has put himself into danger. Jesus has come close to listen to our fears, to know our pain, to feel our loneliness. Jesus has journeyed with us humans. And that's how he ended up in the boat on that afternoon in the story that we had in our Bible reading. He'd been teaching all day, teaching about the kingdom of God, how to know his Father, God. It was late in the day. The crowds were so big that Jesus had been teaching in a boat. He couldn't stand on the sea. There was on the sand, there were so many people. And at the end of the day, he'd said, let's go away from the crowd so he could get some rest on the other side of the lake. He'd grabbed a pillow, he rested his head, and he'd gone to sleep in the boat. And then in the middle of the lake, you know the story. The wind comes from nowhere. The wind whips up the waves. The waves crash into the side of the boat. The boat starts to fill up. The disciples, some had spent their life on this lake as fishermen. They realized pretty quickly that this tiny boat on the big lake was in deadly danger. You'd think as fishermen they know how to get back to shore safely, and perhaps they tried some things, but nothing was working. And so finally, there's Jesus asleep in the back of the boat. They go, and you can picture in your mind's eye what it would be like to rock his shoulder. Jesus, wake up. And you remember the question. Jesus, don't you care if we drown? Those disciples have asked our question. They asked it in the boat, but that's the question that all humans encounter at one time or another. Jesus, don't you care? The boat's about to crash. We're about to drown. We're about to die. Jesus, don't you care? How can you be asleep while all this is raging around you? Jesus, don't you care? That's our question too. You might not be in a boat. You might not be in a storm. But it's a question on our lips from time to time. Jesus, don't you care that I'm sick? Don't you care that my friendship group is splitting up? Don't you care I need an answer? Jesus, don't you care I'm struggling? Jesus, don't you care I'm missing out? Jesus, don't you care that my parents are not getting along? Jesus, don't you care that I can't get the grades I need? Jesus, don't you care what other people say about me? Jesus, don't you care that I don't feel good enough? Jesus, don't you care? Well, back in the boat, Jesus' answer was a really simple one. They wake him up, he rolls over, and then he stands up in the boat. Now, standing in a boat when everything is calm is hard enough, but the water's raging up and down, but Jesus holds his balance. And he begins to speak, not to the disciples who are in the boat, the ones who have woken him up. He turns around and he calls out. He calls out to that scene right there. And just one sentence, be still. And then the wind goes, the waves flatten. In the story that we read, the attention turns back into the boat and you see the disciples there. Jesus says to them, why do you still not have enough faith? And then this really interesting twist on that story that the disciples are more scared after the storm than in the middle of the storm. And they're asking one another, you can picture them whispering to each other, who is this? Even the wind and the waves obey him. Jesus, don't you care? The answer in the boat was an easy one. Yes, he cares. And he is powerful enough to do something about it, to channel his power to rescue his friends. And that's exactly the same answer we get on every page of the Bible, that Jesus channels his power to care. After that story, Jesus gets off on the other side of the lake and we meet a man there. It's late at night. A man who has been abandoned by his family. He's left to be homeless, to live in isolation in some caves and tormented. And Jesus steps in and cares. The very next morning, Jesus meets a woman who's been sick for 12 years and lost all of her money at the doctor's. And Jesus steps in to care. Then Jesus meets a father whose daughter, 12 years old, has died. And Jesus stepped in to care. On every page of the life of Jesus, you see Jesus stepping in to care. In fact, every time he uses his power, it's always to care and rescue. He never once uses his power just to make himself look good. He heals the sick. He feeds the crowd. He raises the dead. He never shows off. It's always power used to care. He hangs on the cross. And then he comes out of the tomb, again, using his power to care. That is power directed to that question. Jesus, don't you care? Of course he does. And it's true for us too. Because Christians believe that Jesus is not just God out there, but that he has bridged the gap and come close to us. God might be invisible to us, but you are not invisible to God. But here's the problem, and I think this is the problem that we all feel. These things might be true on the pages of the Bible. Problem, Jesus fixes it. Problem, Jesus fixes it. Someone upset, Jesus fixes it. Someone sick, Jesus fixes. It's almost instant every time in the Bible stories. But it doesn't always feel immediate for us today. What I mean is it doesn't, we know intellectually Jesus is powerful enough and he loves us, but we often don't get the quick answer that we want or the easy answer. We would love it to be like we're in the boat and Jesus just stands up and does it and fixes our problem, but sometimes he does and other times he doesn't. Here's why. Jesus in the boat, and every time you see Jesus in action in the Bible, they are all just little rescues that are actually pointing ahead to the big rescue. Pointing ahead to the big rescue that cost Jesus his life hanging on the cross. Jesus fixing the storm and saving his friends from drowning was just a little rescue to point ahead to the big rescue when Jesus saves not just from the storm, but from the storm of God's judgment. Where Jesus saves not just from drowning, but Jesus saves from our great enemies of humanity, the fact that we are running away from God, we're cut loose from Him, and we're in danger of being separated from God's goodness forever. And Jesus steps in to rescue in that grand level. So we read the Bible stories and we think, why can't He do that today? But really, those stories are appointed to the great rescue that Jesus has already achieved. We might feel we're in the boat, Jesus, get rid of the storm I'm walking through right now. But His actions in that boat point ahead to the grand rescue on the cross, coming out of the grave, defeating death, and breaking the great enemies of humanity. And when we look at Jesus there in the boat, it teaches us what He's like. He's strong. He's able. He's powerful. And He's loving. And it shows us what life is like when that King is in action. God has written Himself into our story. And stories like that one, Jesus in the storm, they show us how the story is going to end, with this one reigning as King forever. Jesus, don't you care? The extraordinary claim of Christianity is He's not just out there, but He's come close. Written Himself into our story to come close, to care, to rescue, and to give us a glimpse of the kind of King that He really is.